Hello. Hello. And welcome to Animal Voices. It's actually the first time Lauren and I have actually been in the studio in probably over a month.
So we brought to you our greetings in unison today. I'm glad to be back here and missed everybody out there in Radio Land.
On today's show, we'll first be speaking with a new vegan, Sheena Turcott. She actually won the amazing Vegan World Fusion Cuisine Cookbook on our giveaways show a few weeks ago. And in her email to me, she said, "I'm going vegan as of January 1st, 2006. So I thought it'd be interesting to have her on the show and sort of chronicle her path on veganism and see if she has any concerns, any questions, and see if we can build a resource for her and ask experts on the show who have been on the show to help her out with any concerns she might have and hopefully help people." Why are you laughing at me? people in the booth are kind of smiling strangely at me. I don't know why. But and then hopefully people out there who might be going through the same experience can learn from this. Then we're going to go to the news, and then Lauren's going to do an interview with Jennifer from veganlunchbox.com.
Yeah, it's veganlunchbox.blogspot.com, but if you just go to Google and key in vegan lunchbox, it's three words, it'll bring you up to the page. We're going to talk with Jennifer about running this very beautiful, heartwarming site. It chronicles the different lunches that she makes for her son, and they are pieces of art. They're gorgeous, and you get the reviews of her son as well featured on the website. But more than just being a wonderfully creative site, it's vegan activism it's probably its most ambitious and fun. And Jennifer's going to talk to us about vegan parenting and raising her son vegan. So we're excited to have her on the program at around 11:30.
It's going to be fun. On the line now is Sheena Turcott. Sheena, are you there?
Yes, Rob.
Hi, Sheena. How are you doing?
I'm very good. And you?
I'm very well. Thank you. So first of all, congratulations on winning the cookbook.
Thank you so much. I'm so thrilled. I haven't gotten it yet, but I'm waiting anxiously.
Yeah, I think if anything's going to help you become and stay vegan, it's that cookbook for sure. I'll email you my favorite recipes.
Thanks.
So first of all, what inspired you to become vegan?
I mean, really, it was podcasts. I mean, I had first started out as a vegetarian, and I've been predominantly vegetarian for a number of years, and I'm a performance, first and foremost, performance artist, but I also have an administrative job, and it's mostly at the computer, so I listen to a lot of music, and then I stumbled upon podcasts, and I stumbled upon yours, firstly, because I was looking for stuff with regards to animal activism and locally, because I wanted to get into the community and stuff, and I downloaded all of your podcasts.
Yeah,
that's a lot of podcasts.
I swear to God, I listened to like 4 to 5 hours a day.
Wow.
For a long time. Yeah, but it was amazing because I was just like feeding up all this information, you know, and a lot of things that I didn't know. It was mainly that I didn't know about the traumas of the dairy industry and all that stuff going on. And like once I knew, I mean, it was the same with vegetarianism. Like I couldn't just ignore the information. And so for the 2 months up to January 1st, I knew that I was going to do it. And I told the boyfriend, my boyfriend, I actually turned him vegetarian, but I told him that I was seriously considering becoming vegan, and he was like, I don't think I can do that, because we both had that vision of the vegan, you know, like I don't know any vegans myself. So it was just an idea. And then I kind of introduced him to all the information that I had read and that I had listened to and all the videos that I'd watched. And yeah, he's doing it too.
That's awesome. And so yeah. It's been 10 days since January 1st. How has it been going so far?
It's been going well. I mean, I've had a few stumbles, of course. I mean, just little things that you don't realize until after the fact. But, you know, it's a learning process. Mm-hmm. And you know, I kind of feel weird calling myself a vegan as well because of the externalities. Like, I mean, I still own leather. I still own wool, and my budget isn't such at this point that I'm able to completely replace everything.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a big frustration with myself. Like, I mean, I feel a bit guilty about that, but I'm just trying to stay focused and to go forward with it, you know, because everything from here forward, I know what I'm doing, and I'm conscious of my decisions and my purchases, but I will slowly replace everything. And, I mean, even cookbooks and stuff, like, I can't wait until I can just, like, revamp a whole cooking library. Like,
right. Yeah. Well, that's the best attitude to have to go into this and try to curb those feelings of guilt, I would say, because it is a process for the to really change that lifestyle. I'm curious though. You said you stumbled a couple times. Could you give us an example?
Like I was, I didn't have any salsa left, so I took out this concoction that I had made to go on my vegan burritos, or no, I think it was vegetarian burritos. I ate it all. It was just like, I thought it was onions and tomatoes and spices. Then I realized after the fact that there was some yogurt in it.
I see.
Yeah, little things like that. But I mean, I don't miss cheese yet, which is good.
That's really good because cheese is really addictive.
Cheese is really addictive. And like the month before I went vegan, I remember I tried. I was having a band rehearsal and the whole band was having cheesy, beautiful pizza. And I watched them eat it, and I didn't have it just to test myself, and I was just frothing at the mouth. It was horrible, but I did it. But now that I'm a vegan January 1st, it's been okay.
That's awesome. You know, Dr. Neil Bernard from the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, he wrote a book called, I can't remember what it is, but it talks about the foods that are addictive, and I believe it was chocolate and sugar and cheese that were his three top addictive foods.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And that cheese, because of casein, and I guess it's an opiate derivative.
I know.
And the way he talks about the dairy industry and how they kind of seem to capitalize on that to try and make it more addictive to people.
Yeah.
It's interesting once you intellectualize that. It sort of makes the process easier. At least it did for me anyway.
Yeah, and I think it's a lot of just continuing to read and continuing to reaffirm your choices. Like I'm reading the China study right now, and that book blows my mind. Like, it's amazing. I mean, all that information, and it's just stuff that people don't know.
Sheila, it's so great to have your
Sheena,
it's wonderful to have your enthusiasm. I just wanted to back up for a minute for our listeners and let them know what veganism is. As you said yourself, you didn't know any vegans, and I think for a lot of people, maybe somebody tuning in who's never heard about the term before, what is veganism for you?
Veganism for me is to try and lead my life and my lifestyle without any animal products, whether it be animal byproducts, like the little things you find in gelatinous candies or anything like that, and also leather and dairy and cheese and fish and milk and everything that people just, everything that's in everything of the world.
Right.
Especially our world. But it's possible. And it's, there's a peace of mind knowing what you know and choosing to put your dollars where they matter most.
Okay, so for you, and I think for a lot of people, this is the difference between vegetarianism and veganism, that for a lot of people, veganism is more than just diet. It is looking at, whether or not your products that you are using are tested on animals, or whether or not the things that you're wearing have animal products. But I know a lot of people are similar positions as you, and would consider themselves vegans, but have their old leather or maybe buy secondhand leather, and don't see it as contributing directly to the harm of animals. So I think for a lot of people, it is it's a definition that is up for debate. But I just wanted to make sure our listeners knew what we were talking about today when we're talking about going vegan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you said, so you don't have any friends who are vegan. Do you anticipate any problems discussing veganism with your friends or family?
I try not to bring it up. I mean, I bring my food everywhere. I'm also kind of sensitive to wheat, so that, like, I cook all the time. You know, I have to bring everything everywhere. And I think when it comes up in that way, like, I brought tofu scramble to a band rehearsal, and everyone was really curious, and it smelled great, and they all had a piece, had a bite, and they really enjoyed it, and that kind of leads to the topic of conversation. And I think you guys have talked about it on your show. You can't force it upon people. They have to kind of discover it themselves if they're going to actually really listen to what veganism really is and its issues.
You're going to be in a position that you're going to be packing an extra lunch every time.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I don't really – I told my parents, and my dad is like – I come from the most meat and potatoes family ever. Like, my dad is a hunter, and, like, he brings the meat home. He, like, skins it in the garage.
Gotcha.
Yeah, so that's my family. But they're totally supportive.
That's great.
Yeah, I mean, they don't – and they accommodate me whenever I'm home and everything like that. But yeah, of course, they'll question. They'll be like, why are you doing that? But, you know.
Well, I want you to know, if you have any questions or concerns, like in the near future, let me know. email me, and then we'll try to get some, either some corresponding experts that we've had on the show to come on the show and then talk to you about it and help guide you through the process. Or I'll also invite any of our listeners to email us at animalvoices@ciut.fm. If you have any advice or kind words to share with Sheena, if you've gone through the process or if you are also going through the process, if you want to connect with Sheena and talk about becoming vegan together or something, we can try to facilitate that connection as well.
We want to be your cheerleaders is what it comes
down
to.
We're going to be your cheerleaders, Sheena.
Thank you so much because I really need that. I mean, on January 1st, I went to the vegan potluck with cars. And I mean, like, especially because, I mean, my circle of friends isn't really all about the animal activist consciousness world, you know? So I think that would really help along the way, and I'm going to try and make the most effort to go out to these, like, events and to meet people, and I think especially with that support network. Like, you guys are my cheerleaders.
Okay, good. I don't know if you've heard of this book, but I always feel compelled to plug it when somebody is thinking about going vegan, because I always think that one of the things that puts veganism back is when people try to go vegetarian or vegan and then end up feeling not very well. And so I always want to make sure people are very nutritionally informed. And I assume you've heard of this book, and we've interviewed the authors before on the show, but it's called Becoming Vegan. It's by Vasanto Molina, yeah, and Brenda Davis. And they're fabulous nutritionists, Canadian-based nutritionists. And it's that book, Becoming Vegan, is just packed full of great accessible information about diet and how to do veganism as healthy as possible. I was really glad actually to see over the past little while that the soy milks, a lot of the soy milks that are coming up have omega-3s and 6s in them, because for vegans sometimes it's difficult to get omega-3 and 6, and so you can find that in you know, hemp seed oil or in flaxseed oil, but now some of the soy milks are fortified with that too. So anyway, you'll find information like that in Becoming Vegan, and I just want to let our listeners know about it as well.
I actually went to try and buy it at Urban Herbivore the other day, but they didn't have it, so I'm going to order it online. But definitely, I have thought about that book. And I take my flax seeds every
month.
Okay.
There's a couple of stores in Toronto that used to carry it as well. Herbivore was actually just carrying it because I think it was an organization or a store had some overflow, and so I don't know if they're going to regularly carry it, but Grassroots usually has copies. Noah's has copies as well. So.
Okay, great. Yeah. Thank you.
All right. Well, Sheena, I know you're also going to be gracing Toronto's stages very soon. Do you want to tell people about that?
Yeah, I'm actually currently taking a 5-minute break. We're doing, I'm going to be in Cannes Stage's upcoming production of Hair.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And, well. Sheena, are you going to be naked on stage?
Vegan and naked.
Well, you heard it here first, people. You can go see Sheena the Naked Vegan in Cannes Stage's production of Hair, soon to be.
I think that's a whole other show.
Well, Sheena, I'm so glad that you won the cookbook, and I'm so glad that you made that pledge to jump into veganism, and we'll do everything we can to help guide you through the process.
Wow, guys, I feel like I'm talking to famous people, and really, thank you so much for support.
When I first got to know Rob, he was in the middle of transitioning to veganism, so I've witnessed Rob over the years, and you went vegan pretty fast, but I know there were things that you missed as well. And
what about toothpaste? Can you just answer toothpaste?
Toothpaste.
Yeah.
Nature's Gate.
Really? No, like Colgate or no like Crest or anything like that. Right?
Well, I'm not sure about the ingredients inside of those products, but for sure the companies test on animals. So something like Tom's of Maine is more widespread if you don't have access to or can't afford to go to a health food store. The Tom's of Maine is a little bit more pricey, but you can get it at a pharmacy at a regular Shoppers Drug Mart usually. But Nature's Gate really goes a long way, and it's not tested on animals, and the ingredients are really good.
Great. Thank you so much.
All right,
you're welcome.
Well, we're going to check in with you every now and again and see how you're doing, okay?
Great. Thanks so much, guys.
All right. Well, good luck with the show.
Thanks. Bye.
Okay, bye-bye. And that was Sheena Turcotte, the new vegan of 2006, and will help guide her through that process. And also with your emails. Again, you can email animalvoices@ciut.fm if you have some kind and guiding words for Sheena.
And you wanted to do a whole series. Did you want to do it just on Sheena, or did you want to have other people who are
I don't
maybe...
know. We're going to see how it goes. We're going to see how it goes with Sheena first of all.
Because if you have a story about going vegan, or if you're recently going vegan in 2006, we'd love to hear from you. You can write us at animalvoices@ciut.fm, and we can see what we can do for you. We might be able to profile you on an upcoming show, and it would be wonderful to map people's journeys.
And our website, actually, I realize we haven't said our website yet. It's www.animalvoices.ca. You can go there to learn more about our show and download all of our shows. And we're also on podcasting. Remember that as well. Now we're going to talk about this week's news. From the Independent, wildlife researchers have found new evidence that Arctic polar bears, already gravely threatened by the melting of their habitat because of global warming, are being poisoned by chemical compounds commonly used in Europe and North America to reduce the flammability of household furnishings like sofas, clothing, and carpets. There is also evidence that compounds similar to polybrominated diphenyls, or PBDEs, have contributed to a surprisingly high rate of hermaphroditism in polar bears. About 1 in 50 female bears on Norway's Svalbard Islands has both male and female sex organs, a phenomenon scientists link directly to the effects of pollution. The Arctic is now a chemical sink, declared Colin Butfield, a campaign leader for the Worldwide Fund for Nature, which last month indicated that killer whales in the Arctic were also suffering from elevated levels of contamination with fire retardants as well as other man-made compounds. Chemicals from products that we use in our homes every day are contaminating Arctic wildlife. The pollutants are carried northwards from industrialized regions of the U.S. and Western Europe on currents and particularly on northbound winds. Contaminated moisture often condenses on arriving in the cold Arctic climes and is then deposited, ready to enter the food chain. For several years, scientists have observed how the concentrations of the pollutants are magnified as they ascend the food chain, from plankton to fish and then to marine mammals such as seals, whales, and polar bears. The new study, first published last month in the journal Environmental Science and Technology, shows, for instance, that one compound was 71 times more concentrated in polar bears than in the seals they normally feed upon. Next, from TheAge.com, out of Australia, the captain of a ship that sideswiped a Japanese whaling supply vessel in the Southern Ocean says he wouldn't have had to take the action if the Australian government was doing its job. Paul Watson, captain of the Farley Mowat, a ship run by the militant U.S.-based, or so the article says, militant, U.S.-based Sea Shepherd Conservation Society, said the Oriental Bluebird had refused orders to leave the Southern Ocean Whale Sanctuary. "We sideswiped them to get our point across," Captain Watson told the Seven Network by satellite phone from the Southern Ocean. The Farley Mowat, which has a blade device on its side designed to rip open a ship's hull, damaged the side of the Oriental Bluebird. The incident followed claims by Greenpeace that the Japanese factory ship Nishin Maru had rammed a Greenpeace ship during the escalating war between conservationists and the Japanese whaling fleet. The Greenpeace ships, Esperanza and Arctic Sunrise, had been hounding the Japanese whaling fleet across the Southern Ocean Whale Sanctuary since December 21st. Captain Watson, who has repeatedly warned that he intends to stop the Japanese whaling fleet, dismissed criticisms his tactics would jeopardize the cause of conservationists. "We are dealing with criminals here, and that is what people seem to forget," he said. "The fact is that if the government of Australia was doing its job, we wouldn't be here." And let's look at exactly what Captain Watson is trying to stop. From Yahoo.com, "The full cruelty of modern-day commercial whaling was made public by the release of footage by Greenpeace of Japanese whalers hunting down a mink whale in the Southern Ocean sanctuary off of Antarctica. The footage shows Japanese whalers using a high-powered harpoon to gun the mink whale down. The harpoon embeds in the mink's back, hooking the large whale, but failing to kill it. The whale is then reeled in and tethered to the side of the boat with the harpoon still embedded in it. With its head and blowhole trapped underwater, the whale struggles for nearly 10 minutes, unable to gasp for air, before finally dying. International Fund for Animal Welfare scientist and international whale expert Vasily Papastavrou, who analyzed the footage, said, "This is nothing short of a modern-day tragedy. This is how a whale was killed with observation boats in plain view. So what happens when no one is watching?" Despite a global ban on commercial whaling imposed by the International Whaling Commission in 1986, Japan is currently hunting 935 mink whales in the Southern Ocean Sanctuary. This is more than double the number of whales it took there last year, in an area the IWC and international community has designated as a sanctuary for whales since 1994. Japan hunts under the guise of scientific whaling, and in addition to mink whales, it also plans to harpoon 10 endangered fin whales over the coming months. over the next 2 years. It plans on hunting 50 endangered humpback whales and an additional 40 fin whales.
You're listening to CIUT 89.5 FM. That was Rob Moore bringing us the news. At the top of the program, we heard from Sheena, who is a new vegan for 2006. We're going to be following her journey through veganism over the course of at least the next few months, maybe the year.
And you can see her naked in Can Stage's production of Hair.
And Hair. We're going to take a short break, come back with Jennifer McCann, who runs a lovely site called Vegan Lunchbox. We're going to talk to her about vegan parenting, about what a vegan could eat for lunch, and all the lovely things she makes for her son. So please stay tuned, CIUT 89.5. Hello and welcome back to Animal Voices. You're listening to CIUT 89.5 FM. Rob Moore just left the premises, and I will be your host for the rest of the hour. My name is Lauren Corman, here with Lamia Teking. At the beginning of the hour, we heard from Sheena, who is a new vegan. Had won our one of our cookbook giveaways in the new year, and we're very excited to map her progress going vegan. Now we are turning to an interview with Jennifer McCann. I'm really excited to speak with her. She runs a website called Vegan Lunchbox, as well as a couple of other sites. A friend of mine introduced me to this site, and it really warmed my heart. And I can't say that that's true for a lot of stuff around animal issues or veganism. It's so often you're confronted with looking at really terrible pictures and really awful things that are happening in the world. And so when you stumble upon something like this site, it's very inspiring. It made my mouth water, and I really wanted to hear more about Jennifer and making vegan lunches for her son and why she started this project. So Jennifer, thank you so much for being on the program.
Well, thank you.
It's wonderful to have you here today. I don't know where to start exactly. Tell us about who you are. You talk about yourself on the site as a vegan activist. So why did you go vegan? What's your story, and how did you come to doing the Vegan Lunchbox site?
Well, I first became vegetarian back when I was a teenager, back in high school. I was about 16, and I read a vegetarian cookbook, and I was really moved. So it kind of went from there, being vegetarian and vegan on and off for years and years. Let's see, and then we had a child, and now he's entering his first year in school with full time with a lunch. So I really started thinking, well, what am I going to pack him for lunches? Because remembering my lunches that I packed myself in high school, it was pretty much peanut butter and jelly mm-hmm. and carrot sticks every day, day after day. And I thought, this isn't going to cut it with this kid, you know. And so I went to him and I asked him, well, you're starting your first day of school, what do you want for your lunch? And he said, sushi. I thought, brilliant. It is really ahead of me. And that really got me started thinking about vegan lunches and thinking this was really an interesting project to maybe start on, because I made his first lunch. I took a picture of it, and I thought, I got to put this on my blog. It's so adorable. And then I thought, you know, maybe I'll make some other kind of nice lunches, and I'd like to have them all together so that I could look back and see an archive of all the lunches that I've made that have worked out really well. And maybe that would help other vegan moms who are packing lunches, or maybe other students or people who are packing lunches for themselves. So that's how it started, and it's just been incredible, the response I've got.
The sushi story is kind of circular, because I just saw on your site that you got a gift that relates to sushi and lunches. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, the laptop lunch people just put out a brand new product called a bento bag, and the lunch box fits inside the bag with a thermos and a water bottle, and so they sent that to me as a Christmas gift, which I was amazed. And so I volunteer in the classroom once a week, and so this time, instead of stealing food out of his lunch box at lunchtime, I got to bring my own, so we got to have sushi for two there at lunchtime.
I think your word adorable is so fitting. I mean, the site is really adorable. I like, tell us about the reviews, how the site works.
Well, every day I take a picture of his lunch and describe it. And then I wait for him to get home, and then I see how it went, you know, what he thought or how he ate, and that's my little verdict. I give it, you know, 1 to 5 stars, and people can make comments, which is one of the funnest aspects, I think, of the site, is listening to what everyone else has to say.
And people make a lot of comments. I mean, this
yeah.
is not – I was thinking as a parent that – Just to read all this stuff, I mean, I assume it cuts into your time a bit, although I know it must be really exciting to see people so enthusiastic about the site.
Yeah, it's fun. And I get a lot of questions and a lot of advice. I've got some really good tips that have helped me, too, with the lunches. And
tell us about what people are asking you then. What do they want to know when they write into your site?
Well, for example, yesterday what he wanted was a veggie hot dog. So everyone's asking now, well, what kind of hot dogs do you buy? And that can be really exciting because then other people will answer, I try this hot dog or that, and, you know, we like the texture of this one. So it kind of gives you something to go on there.
Mm. And what about tips? You said that you've learned things from other people. What have been some of the things, valuable things that you've learned from others posting to your site?
Oh, let me think. So much. I learned about mini bagels from somebody, and they fit so perfectly in the lunchbox and give them a little finger foods that are easier to eat. Oh, gosh, so much. I can't think of anything.
Well, I'll let your mind work on that somewhere in the background. Tell us about some of the things that he likes the best, I guess.
Yeah, he is really crazy about beans, which are really high in protein, so I'm really glad that that's one of his favorites. So tortilla wraps are one of his favorite things, where I just lay out a tortilla, spread it with refried beans, give it a little sprinkle of cumin, and then roll it up and cut it into bite-sized pieces. That's a real favorite of his. The pita with hummus. He really loves pasta, so we make a lot of, like, macaroni and lima beans, things like that he really likes. And lately, he has really liked the veggie meats. That's something that I have never really fixed before. So he's been enjoying that since he started school. I think he really likes that it looks like what the other kids are eating, so he feels that he's not missing out on anything, you know, and they have a really nice chewiness that he likes, I think. So we're having fun with hot dogs, and he just asked for veggie bologna, so we're going to try that and see what he thinks.
Yeah, I mean, there's a real sense of adventure with this site, too. I mean, you take something that's quite, for me, I'm imagining back when I was in school, too, you know, the peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, and this takes it to a whole nother level. I love the site, too, because it really, I think, challenges people who would think that, well, one, kids aren't adventurous and they're not willing to try new things and they like regular things,
right.
And that also, you know, that vegan food is boring. And so on two different levels, I think that the site challenges a lot of people's assumptions.
Yeah, in fact, some of the comments that I've got that have been most heartwarming have been from people who aren't vegan who say, wow, I'm a meat eater, but I had no idea vegan food could look this good.
Mm.
You know, so it kind of gives me hope. I feel like I'm putting another layer of paint on people, you know, so when they think about veganism again, they can think back and think, well, you know, that didn't look too bad. I think I could eat that.
Mm-hmm. There's a really cute caption about the lima beans, too, because I guess your son, he really likes the lima beans in pasta dish that you do. And I think that the lima bean really gets a bad rap for a lot of people.
It
so it
does.
Was good to see your son reclaim the lima bean.
Yeah, in fact, one time he came into the kitchen and I was boiling lima beans. He says, what's for dinner? And I said, I'm making lima beans, and he jumps up and down and goes, woohoo!
Right on. And he begged you at one point, this was quite recently, about he really wanted to try a fake tuna product called Tuno, and that didn't go so well.
Yeah, he saw somebody at school eating a tuna fish sandwich, which it amazes me that somebody feeds their kid tuna fish.
Mm-hmm.
But he saw it and he wanted to try it. So when we were at the health food store, he saw that there was Tuno and he really wanted it. So I asked my friend at the health food store, I said, have you tried this? He says, yeah. Is it good? No. I wasn't sure where to go with that, but I finally gave in, and I brought it home, and he watched me prepare it, and it said just use it just like tuna. So I mixed it with some vegan mayonnaise and some capers, which he really loves capers, and put it on the bread, and he was really excited. So I was a little dubious. I said, why don't you take a bite before lunchtime, see if you like it? And he took a bite, and he said, no.
Mm.
So that one didn't work out so well. That was the only lunch that I've given no stars to.
Right.
I went ahead and made a peanut butter jelly sandwich that day.
Right, the fallback, the standard.
Yeah. Thank goodness for peanut butter.
So how has this eating vegan lunches gone in terms of your son's interaction with other students at school? Is he kind of strange for having vegan food, or is it not recognized that way? How does he interact with the other students in this food?
Well, you know, on one way, we're really lucky. He goes to a private school, and they don't have a cafeteria or a hot lunch program, so all the children bring their own lunches. So he's not strange in that way, and they eat in the classroom, so he only eats with four other kids at a little table. So I think in some way that makes it easier for us. But he does get noticed sometimes. People do ask what it is, but it's not in a negative way. Usually it's in a really positive way. For example, when I brought in the sushi and we were eating together, I mean, the kids thought that was so cool that we had chopsticks and we had sushi. And one of the other kids came up to me and said, "You guys are vegetarian. Do you not eat meat?" And I said, "No, that's right, we don't. Do you think that's meat?" And he says, "Yeah, I've never known any vegetarians except for Dane, you know, my son." So he was pretty impressed. And so it's not in a negative way, but he does get attention because everyone thinks his lunches are so cool.
Yeah, I can't. I mean, I imagine he doesn't feel left out, but does it ever come up that he wants to, you know, if he goes to a birthday party, or how are things like that negotiated?
Yeah, that does come up. And my answer is, anything that you can do, I can do vegan. So whatever it is that he wants,
right,
he can come to me and I can come up with something.
Hmm.
So like right now, one of his friends is eating, I think they're called Zingers. They're like Twinkies covered in coconut and frosting. And he heard that those were really good. So he looks at me. So I think in the lunchbox pretty soon you're going to see a vegan Twinkie. I'll come up with it somehow.
Let us know. That would be pretty fun. So what, I was looking through the website and I was just so compelled by how beautifully put together it was. And I was thinking, I wonder if you ever get parents who look at the site and they go, wow, you know, if I had more time, if I wasn't trying to juggle, you know, these jobs, if I had access to the ingredients. Do you have ideas for people who are maybe on a strict budget or a strict time commitments? I assume that you are very busy as well, but do you have any advice for people who are maybe feeling like they can't put together such beautifully crafted meals?
Yeah. In fact, I am working on a cookbook to go with the site called The Vegan Lunchbox, and one of the chapters is quick and easy. So I've tried to assemble all the ideas and the lunches that are really quick to make. The biggest thing that I would say is write everything down. Like, give yourself a week's worth of menus. Write it all down at once. Then you only need one trip to the store, and you don't have to wake up at 6 o'clock in the morning and go, what am I going to do today? You know, it's already written down for you. That makes it go a lot faster, and you don't have to think so much about it. And things like making things the night before, like if you have a soup with a thermos, you can put that all together and just warm it up in the morning and put it in the thermos, and it's good to go. And things like sandwiches are really fast to put together, or veggie burgers that you can just fry up and stick on the bread and put in the lunchbox. It doesn't have to take a lot of time. Of course, I really enjoy cooking and gourmet cooking, so some of them are a little more time-consuming, and I'm putting those in the cookbook, too, for the people who really just have fun with it.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't have to be that way. And I think we're really lucky nowadays with all the products that are coming into the market. I mean, when I was a teenager, I would never have dreamt that you could go into a regular supermarket and find soy milk and veggie burgers and little veggie deli meats and stuff like that.
Hmm. So there are going to be lots of different options for people with different, different needs in terms of putting together a lunch like this.
Right. Yeah. We have the quick and easy, and then the things that might take a little more time and involve the kids a little more, you know, in the preparation, and things that you can do the night before. And then we have my favorites, which are the, I call them the lunchbox adventures, and they're the more themed lunches that are ethnic, like I have a Greek lunchbox and, of course, the sushi lunchbox. I have an Ethiopian lunchbox. Those are the ones where I get really excited.
Trying out new things is part of the fun of it all, I guess.
Right.
Rather than the scariness of trying to force your kid to eat something that they don't want to eat, this is part of the whole adventure.
Right. And, you know, a lot of people do say, I can't imagine kids eating that way. But, you know, when you have those things in the house and they see their parents eating that way and getting excited about it, I think that kids are a little more willing to try if their parents are also adventurous and just getting really enthusiastic and excited about trying new foods, but not in a way that, you know, they feel like they have to eat that way.
When we've had other people on the program before, we ask them, you know, what do you eat? Because this is a question that vegans get all the time. That
right.
I think that a lot of people think that veganism means that you take away things. So they imagine a regular meal and then they imagine things minus off the plate.
Right.
And often we're interviewing people who have been vegan for a really long time, and they say things, you know, that are very simple, like I eat a lot of beans. And I think that makes sense. But often it doesn't really give maybe our listeners who aren't vegetarian or vegan a real sense of what that means. It can sort of sound boring and drab. So I was hoping that you could describe a few of the different lunches that you've put together, just so we can dispel some of those myths about what does a vegan eat anyway? What does a vegan eat for lunch, or what could a vegan eat for lunch? Can you give us some ideas?
Yeah, I mean, the variety is just about endless. But, you know, as far as beans go, I really do feel that beans are getting a bad rap, and we should all eat a lot more of them. They're wonderful, but, you know, they don't have to be boring. Like, for example, over Christmas, I made tamales with black bean filling. So I cooked black beans and refried them, put them in the corn masa, and folded them up in a corn husk and steamed them into these little tamales that you dip into salsa. And those were just wonderful. And that's just one thing. And then, of course, let's think. Today he had tofu fish sticks, which are one of his favorites, where I take tofu, slice it up, cut it with cookie cutters into little fish shapes, dip them in a little breading, and broil them in the oven. So he has those to dip in a little ketchup with some tater tots. And on the side, he had some pudding made of chocolate rice milk with bananas and a couple little applets and cutlets for a treat. And so that's just one lunch, and you can see that there's just, oh, gosh, it's just endless.
What are some of your favorites?
Well, I really like the Ethiopian lunchbox. I would like to make injera bread, which is a bread that's traditional in Ethiopia. It's a flat bread, almost like a pancake, made of teff flour, which is the tiniest grain in the world, and it's also very high in calcium and protein. So you make these flat breads and then make a split pea stew and a spicy vegetable, mixed vegetable stew. And you take pieces of that bread, and my son likes to call it silverware bread, because instead of silverware, you use the bread, scoop up the stew or the vegetables, and eat it like that. So when I put that in the lunchbox, I just rolled that bread up tight and cut it into little bite-sized pieces, and it looked so cute in the little box.
Right. Yeah, cuteness is definitely, I mean, I think it should be rated on that as well, not just how wonderful it tastes. I mean, there was just so many comments that I looked at on the site as well of people writing in and saying things like, I wish you were my mom, or this is making me hungry, things like that. So as a vegan parent, I'm wondering too, when we had Aaron Pavlina on the show a little while ago, it's been a number of months now, but when we had her on the program, we talked a lot about how it's been to relate to other parents and other people who look at a child who is eating vegan, and some of the difficulties or struggles that people can sometimes have trying to communicate why they have the diet that they do. Have you found that it's been okay in terms of feeding your son vegan, or having other people understand why you do that?
Well, I've been pretty lucky. I think that the friends and the family that we surround ourselves with have been pretty positive. But, yeah, you do get those worries, and sometimes it seems like, you know, you can't get a sniffly nose without somebody thinking, it's the diet, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So that can be difficult, yeah. But I feel like in my case, things might be a little different versus somebody who has a completely vegan household, because my husband is an omnivore.
Mm.
So we have a mixed marriage, and that can make it a little more difficult, I think. So
What does he think about your food choices and having your son eat vegan? I don't know, if does your son eat vegan all the time, or does he eat what your husband is eating as well?
Yeah, he'll eat he has actually made the decision. I pretty much have left it in his, you know, it's up to my son to make that choice, because I couldn't force it on him. My husband, he respects me and he does support me, but in a kind of, I don't really get it kind of way. So I had to leave it up to my son, and I just, you know, I eat the way I ate, and my husband ate the way he ate. And so it wasn't until about last year in kindergarten when James really started asking questions, and I started answering them just honestly, you know, not in a, you know, well, I didn't want to scare him or really upset him.
Yeah, I mean,
the honest truth, you know, things that you're eating are from dead animals, and I don't eat them because I don't think an animal should suffer and die for me to eat. You know, just in a gentle way. And so right around the middle of kindergarten, he said, you know, I want to be a vegetarian too. And at that time I thought, well, I'm not sure if he understands quite what it means. But sure enough, he did. And I've been so amazed and impressed with him and his choice that he's made, because I really have left it up to him, you know. So when he goes places to eat and he asks what's vegetarian and he makes that choice, you know, I'm just so proud of him and amazed. And, you know, Howard Lyman in his book, No More Bowl, he talks about giving children the truth. And he says, you know, if you give kids the truth, they're going to choose the side of the angels. And he says, sure enough, he really has. And it's been really impressive for me. So I feel like when he made that choice, my job became to be his support, to make sure that in whatever situation he's going into, school or a party or, you know, dinner with family, wherever we go, I have to make sure that there's something there that he can eat to support him in that choice and to show him that it's not, you know, it's not a difficult choice, it's not deprivation, that there's going to be something like the other kids have a treat and you have a treat too. So that's become my job, his cheerleader.
That's wonderful. I think that a lot of times the issues around children just make people very nervous that they might look at veganism as kind of eccentric, and they think, well, that's fine for yourself, but you know, you're brainwashing your children. And there's kind of a double standard that when kids are growing up in a meat and dairy based eating culture, that those kids aren't necessarily seen as being brainwashed, but when somebody is doing something different than the norm, then it gets a more critical, I guess, perspective on
it. Yeah, and what's really funny is I know so many people who said as children they didn't want to eat meat, that it was really gross to them and it was really upsetting when they found out what it was, but they don't get the choice not to. There's a real double standard.
Yeah. When we've interviewed Ray Sikora and Zoal, who are really fantastic humane educators, they both talk about, and I know this isn't true right across the board, but so many children do feel a special connection with animals, and being vegetarian or vegan is just a continuation for at least some kids, a lot of kids, to be able to embody their values and what they're putting in their mouths. So it's wonderful to have the choice as a little kid.
Yeah, exactly. I think really if you're open to allowing them to do that and giving them the truth, it just seems like a really logical way to go.
So tell us more about your book, because we're just closing the interview. We only have a few more minutes. This sounds like a pretty ambitious project as well. You're a parent, and you do all this other stuff with your activism, and now you're putting out a book. When is that going to be available for people?
Well, I'm aiming for spring. I've never done a book before, and I am self-publishing, so it's kind of an adventure, and we're taking it as we go. But the book right now is written at this point, and I've got the software, and I'm learning how to typeset. So I'm going to be typesetting it, then we're going to be sending it off to the printer. So really, I'm shooting for hopefully springtime. Yeah, it's pretty exciting.
You said that there's going to be different sections, sort of depending on people's commitment or desire to do more elaborate things. Is this going to be a pretty lengthy cookbook then, or...?
Well, what I have right now is 50 menus, so it's going to be 10 weeks worth of lunches, and each one's going to be designed as a menu, a complete well-balanced lunch, and with the recipes included to make that lunch. And so it's divided up into lunches that are quick and easy, lunches that take a little more time, lunches you can make the night before, the lunchbox adventures, and then the special occasion lunches, like for I have themed lunches for Christmas, Thanksgiving, Halloween, for birthdays, things like that.
And are these then geared specifically towards children, or is it for anybody?
Yeah, not necessarily. I mean, some of them are more kid-friendly, and of course, everything I've made has been kind of geared towards all palates, especially, you know, the kids. Like, I put a note in there that these really aren't very spicy, and feel free to leave out the onions, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it would be appropriate for anyone who packs their own lunch, students just starting out, or people who go to the office every day and need a lunch.
I think, again, I mean, this seems to counteract a stereotype, too, if you're gearing us towards, you know, maybe parents or other people that are cooking for others. I think that veganism, animal rights activists, vegetarians probably in general, it gets associated sometimes with more of a youth culture, people who are just going to be cooking for themselves. And I was curious if you could talk about some of the dialogue or email that you've had with people who are parents. Is there a big population of vegan parents out there that are looking for this type of information, or is it mostly coming from people who are younger that are just wanting to know what the heck to make themselves for lunch?
You know, I think it's about half and half. You know, I do hear from vegan parents who are looking for ideas, and then I hear from a lot of people who are, you know, starting to cook for themselves. And the other other population that I do hear a lot from are people with children with allergies. Mm. So that is actually a really growing segment of the population, I think. So I do have in the cookbook a little, every recipe will be noted for being free of, you know, gluten or soy or nuts. And, of course, everything's free of eggs and dairy. So that makes it nice for anybody who has food allergies, too. So a lot of the parents I hear from are in that category.
Hmm. And so do you have any closing advice for people who are, you know, interested in either going vegan or, you know, wanting to diversify their diets a little bit more? Things that maybe you wish you had known stepping into this, or things that you've learned along the way?
Well, the internet is a wonderful thing that I did not have when I was first becoming vegetarian. I would say get on the internet, and there are so many amazing resources out there, so many recipes, ideas, support. So I would say, you know, you can go to my website or any other website and go from there. We have links to different places where you can go and get information.
And you don't just run the Vegan Lunchbox website as well. Can you tell us about some of the other things that you do on the internet?
Well, yeah, I have my own personal blog, which is ShmooBlog. And that's where I go to just talk about my life. I do, I've transitioned to being a vegan knitter, so I talk about my knitting and just the other fun things about my life.
I want to do a whole program just on vegan knitting as well.
That would be great.
Yeah, like, but I was having a hard time finding information about that, because at this point it's just a lot. It seems like a lot of communities of vegans getting together and swapping information. But is there actual sites then that are just, you know, people who are curious about vegan knitting, or is it more like you already got to be in the know and connected with like a group of people?
Well, no. If you go to ShmooBlog, there's a little link in the corner there to Vegan Knitters. So from there you can get a lot of really good information. There's a great website called Fake Sheep, where she lists a lot of the different vegan yarns that you can use and has some really helpful information there about vegan knitting.
There was just one last question I wanted to pick up on, something that you had said kind of offhand at the more the beginning of the interview. And you said about when your son was going to try out the tuna, and he said that he was watching somebody eat a tuna fish sandwich, and you said, I can't believe that people feed their children tuna. Why is that?
Because of the mercury that's being found in tuna fish, they actually have warnings that pregnant women shouldn't eat tuna fish because of the high levels of mercury toxins. And here in Washington, during the nutrition program, they recommend that children under two not be fed tuna fish and that they don't serve it in daycare or preschool settings. So I don't know, that's just kind of a message to me that, you know, gosh, if it's not safe for them, I don't think I would want my older child or myself to be eating that.
Hmm. I imagine it's a bit strange sometimes watching people feed things to their children that you think might be damaging. I mean, in some ways it's how I wonder vegan parents gets viewed, you know, like, oh, I can't believe you don't feed your child dairy.
Yeah.
But just somebody who's looked into nutrition as much as you had, it must be difficult sometimes not to want to go over and say, do you know that has mercury in it and could be very damaging to your health?
Oh, yeah. And I do volunteer in the classroom, and I do watch the kids eat, and it's pretty shocking. It's pretty shocking. I mean, I've seen kids eat bags of marshmallows at school for lunch.
Mm.
I've seen them bring bags from fast food restaurants and eat that. Yeah, and these kids think this is the greatest, you know.
Yeah.
So my son actually, the other day when he was fixing lunch with me, he says, I'm tired of eating lunch at school. The kids eat meat and it's so gross.
Right.
But how funny that everyone worries about the vegan kid feeling picked on or left out, and he's looking at everyone else going, yuck, I can't believe they eat this gross stuff.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, the diet is just such a complicated issue because, you know, with kids who are eating, you know, maybe the bag of marshmallows, is that, you know, where is that coming from? Is that because their parents maybe don't have the time or can't spare the time to put together something more elaborate? Or is it because that's what the kid is asking for? Is it about people not having access to information? I mean, one of the things that really struck me about your website is it's such a non-aggressive way to introduce people to veganism. It's about the friendliest thing I've ever seen. And I was just really impressed. I mean, it lets people go to you to find out more information, but I just imagine it's a bit of a struggle sometimes not want to just spread your word everywhere,
yeah.
Because it is such a positive one.
Well, you know, I really felt that I wanted to be an activist and do more than just eat vegan. I really wanted to spread the word. And that was the way I felt my activism naturally progressed, because I have that love for cooking. I've always loved gourmet cooking, and I want food to be a celebration in my life. I want it to be abundant and positive and delicious. And so that doesn't have to change because you eat animal-free. And so when I started a local group here, Tri-Cities Vegetarians and Friends, and so that's kind of the form I took with it, that we meet once a month for a potluck, that I do cooking demonstrations. I wanted to express that it can still be this wonderful, joyful experience to eat.
I think that's a lovely way to end the interview. Jennifer, thank you so much for being on the program today.
Well, thank you very much.
I'm going to let you plug your website again. Can you tell us what it is?
Okay, it's www.veganlunchbox.com.
Check it out. It's a lot of fun. It's very inspiring, too. I definitely, I've been vegan now for about almost a decade, I guess, and I was very inspired. I thought, I want to start putting together more fun lunches myself. So thank you for that.
Well,
I really appreciate
you.
It. You've been listening to Animal Voices on CIUT 89.5 FM. We were just on the phone with Jennifer McCann, who runs the Vegan Lunchbox site. Check it out. I dare you not to be inspired. And, I also wanted to say that next week we're going to do a show on a follow-up show about the animal victims of Hurricane Katrina. We had done a show about the rescue efforts that were happening there. We're going to find out what has happened, what still needs to be done. And we're also going to do a show on ecotourism and anti-colonialism and animals coming up as well. So I'm excited about that. And thanks, Lamia, for checking. And I'm really glad to be back in the studio with you.
Yeah, it's great. We're going to go out on a song from the Free Oxygen Band, and coming up next is Roadrunner.